Kia ora, kia ora, welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Wallace Chapman here. First this afternoon, the difficulty in sourcing a local chef or cook to work in our hospitality sector. And could we be the dumping ground for the world's second-hand petrol cars? One lobby group says so. If the government does not take steps, we discuss that as well. And Labour MP Kieran McInulty has put up a members' bill to remove restrictions on alcohol sales over Easter, Christmas and Anzac Day, and said, quote, "I went to Easter Sunday Mass, and if I wanted to get a pint afterwards, I should be able to." Do you agree with being able to get a beer after Easter Sunday Mass? We have Dr. Nikki Jackson from Alcohol Health Watch on that. And the band that was dubbed the British ABBA, that at 4:30. Have a guess who that might be. You can text us 2101 or you can pop it up on Twitter at the panel RNZ. Linda Helen is just going, "Ooh, what the who on earth could that be?"
I don't think it was Bross, right?
Bross.
I don't know. One Direction? No? All right.
I fear we're about to be shamed.
Yeah. One Direction, Bros. No. So, well, who are you hearing? You're hearing Linda Helen, who's a journalist and former editor.
The Beatles?
Not the Beatles. Linda.
There was four of them.
Linda Helen. Yeah, very good try. You're a former editor of Eden Garden, is that right?
I am indeed. Yeah.
Linda Helen and Ed Amon.
Yes.
Yep. Ed Amon, comedian and host of Current Affairs podcast Baboon Yodel. Ed, kia ora, welcome to the panel. Second time on. Lovely to have you back as well.
Yes. Kia ora koutou whānau.
Yeah, and with our, well, it's Wednesday, isn't it? So it's the time for Dear Panel, and Laura Dooney is with us. Kia ora, Laura.
Kia ora.
Okay, so what have we got?
Yes, the first letter we have says, "Dear Panel, a colleague was collecting money for the Cancer Society, but I only had a $20 note. When I asked if I could get change, everyone laughed and accused me of being a George Costanza. What should one do in this situation?" And that's from Cecilia in Mount Cook, Wellington.
Well, let's turn to our comedian first.
Well, that's...
Who's George Costanza?
Well, it's a pivotal character from the 90s from the show Seinfeld. And there's no harm in being called George Costanza because there's a principle in it. I mean, if you are only willing to give $5 and you've got a $10 note and you want the $5 back, then it's fine. Otherwise, if you're not getting the change back, you're not going to give more money next time around because you'll be all disappointed in terms of giving your money away to charity.
Taking the philosophical route here.
Yeah,
no, I'm sorry, I go for the opposite. I just say, don't be so tight. Hand your cash over. You're giving. The joy is in the giving, not in the asking for change.
But what about the purity of Ed's argument here? Yeah. If you,
it's a good argument.
If you give $10 over, but you wanted to put $5 in the bucket, but you want $5 back to maybe buy a coffee, what does one do?
One puts the $20 in the...
Yeah.
One carries change. Aren't we talking about that?
Well, one has to. I mean, we can find middle ground here. One has to, when you're trying and approaching a person with a bucket, and right away, just jiggle your pants and see what's there, and accordingly decide what you're going to commit to.
It's quite tricky, though, isn't it? Because often you get asked for money by people collecting on the streets and you only have your postcard, and you say, "I'm really sorry, I don't have any cash on
postcard.
me." And you just know they're looking at you like... Whatever.
Sure.
Well, big charity companies is, I mean, there can be an argument made that you can ask the money back. However, if you're giving some money away to a homeless person or a person in need, do not ask for change.
Change back. Okay, so at the end of the day, it's a bit rude.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't...
Actually, funny you should say that, because on one of the public holidays, I think it must have been Boxing Day, I was driving through the back of Auckland somewhere, and I went to a dairy to stop to grab some things, and I had a $20 note, and there was a guy begging, and I was like, "It's Boxing Day," and so I went to give him my change, and the dairy owner said, "No, don't give him 20, 10's enough." I guess he'd been sitting there all day, and maybe he was doing
enough.
A roaring trade.
Yeah. So what have we agreed on? Basically, to Cecilia, what should one do in a situation? Well, I think it depends.
Possibly if the person asking the question is female or male, I would say from our responses, if you're a female, your friends will think you're a tightwad. If you're a male, they'll think, yeah, fairly reasonable.
Right. Okay. All right. Do we have another question, Laura?
We do. Hello, panel. A little bit of a quandary here. We have, as a flat, agreed to let the partner of a flatmate stay for a while. We agreed loosely on a couple of weeks, which turned into 3 and now into 4 weeks. We're kind of at that point where we need to move forward and are thinking about whether asking him to contribute to costs outside the food. He does do some nice stuff, a bottle of wine here and there, paid for a takeaway meal, but I can't help thinking he should just pay some rent. That's from Eleanor in Pakuranga, Auckland.
Was that a sign of recognition there, Ed?
Mm. Yeah. I've flatted most of my life, and the boyfriend creep in or the girlfriend creep in is never a good sign, because you know you say okay, one night, two nights, whole days, full sports viewings, and you just contribute with a packet of chips. No way. Yes, it's not going to work.
A large packet of chips.
Yeah. Hey. I am totally against that. You got to set the... This is how colonization happens. So you got to set the terms right at the top.
Set the terms right at the top.
Yeah.
I actually quite like that as a concept. I reckon what you should do is definitely, absolutely, you know, you have to stomp on it straight away. I concur. Yeah. But also, maybe you could write a list of all the things you don't want to do and say, hey, look, we love having you here. These are the things we expect from you.
Yeah.
Yes. You can stay here free, but you clean the toilet.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
You dust the blinds, because nobody wants to dust the blinds, right?
So set up
make
a
them work.
So
for
in
it.
Your so in your world, it would be setting up a list of demands.
Oh my lord! You know what? It's been so long since I've had flatmates. It was basically last century.
Yeah.
So.
But it, to Ed's point, it's a fairly common scenario, isn't it?
Oh, awkward.
It is.
And it is awkward, but it's also normal too, because it's life, right? And people have partners and girlfriends and boyfriends and. And there is maybe a period of time where someone is in between houses.
I think that you should just never let them stay for 2 weeks in the first place, right?
Yeah.
That's where they went wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
Amateur mistake.
And as an inviter, you should think about it, because you've set up an ecosystem of 2 to 3 people within the household. Then there's additional person who's crabbing your space as well in your room, and then laying on the couch and doing things and not paying for the internet that is being used.
So there should be
some kind of taxation system that is, you know, equitable.
You've got agreement with someone here. Yeah, man, pay rent! Exclamation mark.
Yeah. I imagine a lot of flats break up because of relationship difficulties.
Yeah,
shall we say?
But you have
people moving.
You have been flatting, but or some time ago,
years
right?
ago. Yeah. In fact, I feel I may have actually moved a boyfriend in once, but
so you right.
That was a long time ago. So let's just.
And how long was it?
That.
Was it for a fortnight?
No, we stayed living there for the whole year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's.
But eventually, we had our own rooms in our fairness, so we did end up paying rent both of us separately.
Well, that's all right, then, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, sometimes they try this trick of if you're a household manager, if you're the lead renter, you know, the guy who collects all the money, and you're pissed off as the lead renter. So what they start doing is they start doing good things for the other people, so they don't want you to leave, So that creates pressure on the lead renter. I'm just talking with personal experience.
Yeah. Maybe you should just before you move into flats, you should just put it out there that one night stands fine.
Yeah.
2 week stands, not so much.
2 week stands.
2 weeks.
Thank you. Thank
commitment.
You both for that. Someone said, Alan asks, the British ABBA, was it the Brotherhood of Man? No, it wasn't Brotherhood of Man. A couple of people have said that. All right, time for I've Been Thinking. Ed, why don't you start? You're feeling new to the panel.
Oh, yeah. So last week I was just totally consumed with some history. And I recently bought a book, New Zealand Wars, by Vincent O'Malley. And I was just starting to really get into
that. Great book, isn't it?
Fantastic book. I started to get into the rabbit hole of it. And then I started, and I found the RNZ documentary, which is the New Zealand Wars Stories of Tainui, which is the newest episode, came out last month. And I was so engrossed in it. It is a history so well told, and it is a history that I wasn't aware of as an immigrant. I've been a citizen for two for 2 years. I've lived here for 10 years. I knew that there was a war in Waikato, but I didn't know the nitty-gritty of it, what led to it, what were the reasons behind it, and what were the consequences of it that we are living with until now. So I got really excited, but a few of my friends, they was like, oh, you know, we know about it, it's okay. I said, no, it's so new to me. So I'm so excited. I've ordered Dr. Ranganui Walker's book as well. So I'm just going to get into it because as an immigrant, I think that it's a crazy position that I'm in because it's my new homeland. Mm. And we hear about all the reports that come out. Every ministry is bringing out reports and there are stats. But this history provides context to those stats. So if I don't know the context, I will not have any idea how to improve things. So, yeah, so I would recommend everyone. Miingarangi Forbes does a fantastic job. Get the podcast as well because it's much more detailed and a fantastic storytelling with William Ray and Forbes as well. It's fantastic. So, yeah.
Right. I've been thinking, Ed, I'm on. Thank you. Linda Helenan, I've been thinking.
Now I just look like some sort of cultural philistine because I've been thinking about wasps. But
right.
Actually, there are some quite easy parallels to draw here
about the wasps
invading
first.
Populations. Oh. So I've been thinking about wasps because obviously I work from home and we've had a couple of really nice days and so I've had the doors open. And wasps, by the billions, obviously, floating around at the moment, this is like peak wasp at the moment. They're all out there hunting for protein to feed their babies and building their nests. And so you see them everywhere. And I remember when I was a kid, I don't really remember seeing wasps the same way that we see now. But also I wondered, why is it that we hate them so much? You know, they're just doing their job of
because
getting
they're nasty,
some...
aren't they?
Well, this is what
because
everybody
they're called
says.
Wasps.
Yeah, but everybody loves bees, right? So it's like, oh, all of our, you know, collective love and admiration goes towards honeybees, which are also yellow and black and fly around collecting nectar. Mm. But we seem to have this real, I don't know, almost fear of wasps.
Yes, we do.
And I thought, this is exactly what I thought. I thought, why do we hate them so much? And so I Googled, why do we hate wasps so much? And literally 3 hours later, I'm now like a walking wasp expert. But it is quite interesting because obviously they do. They compete for honeydew in our beach forests, which makes some sense to me. You don't want that, the German wasps. Paper wasps, though, they're pretty chill. You know, they're just hanging out, building their little papery nests. They do have a slight downside in that they go around at this time of the year if you have a garden, eating all the monarch caterpillars.
Oh.
So, and they literally, I did not know this, but they carve them up like a steak.
All right.
Yeah, they carve them up like a big caterpillar steak and they take them back and feed their young. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably not that nice. But equally, we do that to cows and sheep, right? So.
Mm. Yeah.
So they're sort of similar to us in their role in the world, and yet everyone is so adamant on killing them. And when I see them floating around in my garden, I think, you know, just live and let live sometimes.
Well,
you don't have to kill everything.
Listeners might help us too. Have you had a wasp invasion? I do know when I lived in Nelson, went to Lake Rotuiti there, there were an extraordinary, in fact, the air was thick with wasps around the beech trees there. And it was really something, it was actually hard to sit down on the lake because it was wasp-ridden.
Yeah.
See, on the DOC official website, I googled up to find out why DOC hates wasps. It says here, social impacts. Wasps are a nuisance to forestry gangs and a worry to tourist operators, not as much as COVID. They're unwelcome guests at summer picnics and barbecues. No one finds a wasp sting a fun experience. It's like, well, yeah, that's not a reason to kill them, right?
There's no environmental thing.
Oh, because... no, there is, yeah.
Okay.
So apparently the number of wasps there, and they're growing at a rapid rate, and so they eat lots of native insects. They compete with native birds for the honeydew that scale insects produce in forests. And apparently, this is my favourite fact of the day for wasps. Seasonally in some beech forests, there are an estimated 12 nests or 10,000 worker wasps per hectare, which makes the combined body weight of wasps in these forests higher than the weight of all the native birds, stoats and rodents put together.
Good
oh,
grief.
Oh, wow. So
formidable
many
foes, right?
I mean, I feel there's a bit of a generalization and class system that we have built around this type of insect. So I heard another rumor, and it might be a generalization. They say that bees are more friendlier than wasps. Is that true, or is that... I'll put it out there for the nation to come back to us,
well,
but I don't know.
Well, the problem with wasps is if you disturb them, they go literally gung-ho and attack you en masse,
oh, right.
And they sting like crazy.
Oh, do they?
They hurt much, much more than a bee sting.
No. Do they?
Oh, yeah.
Do they really?
If you're picking fruit and you reach up into a tree and you grab an apple and it's been half eaten by birds and then the wasps have got in there and they sting your hand, it stings for ages, like days and days and days.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But
and
still, you know, who can blame them? They think you're going to kill them.
Yeah, and also you can't enslave them to get all the honey.
Exactly, I reckon that's it. That's we hate it. Them because they have no economic potential.
A wasp flew into my beer bottle and after I took a drink and stung me in my mouth, so no, thank you to wasps. How about that? And kia ora, Edamon, for your kōrero about the Waikato Wars. Wonderful to hear your energy and insight. Says Faye. A lot to discuss here with Ed Amon and Linda Helenan on the panel, RNZ National.